The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. We hope you all had a wonderful Rosh Hashanah, meaningful and inspirational. We're going to be preparing, of course, for Yom Kippur, which is coming up at the end of the week this Saturday, Friday night. It'll be the Kol Nidre. But I'll spare you. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be featuring a rebroadcast with Professor Dr. Elliot Wolfson, wrote a book, Understanding the Concepts of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's actually a very fascinating book. This is a more erudite scholar is Professor Wolfson. We'll be talking about Yom Kippur. There is no portion of the week. It's totally and completely usurped. In fact, we're basically done with portions of the week. The next portion of the week we'll be reading will actually be the book of Genesis, and that's going to be after the holiday of Sukkot. We'll be playing, of course, eclectic Jewish music, various sorts and sundries, a dynamite Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israel security forces arrested three men from Jerusalem and Ramallah who were planning to blow up synagogues on Rosh Hashanah. A bomb-making factory and large supply of weapons was also found in the arrests. The U.S. and Israel carried out a ballistic missile test in the Mediterranean. This is like no joke. This was picked up by Russian radar in the Black Sea, this test. This is a big object flying through the sky. The test comes as both the U.S. and Russia move ships into the area as things heat up in Syria. Because President Obama is delaying action in Syria, the IDF sent home reservists for Rosh Hashanah. Reserves were called up after Syria bombed its own citizens with chemical weapons. The Palestinian Authority demand that Israel provide it with gas masks. Israel has been distributing gas masks for the last 2 weeks. Syrian officials have repeatedly declared that in the event of a Western-led intervention against the regime, they would respond by, of course, attacking Israel. Ariel Sharon, you remember him, had a feeding tube connected to his digestive system this week. The former Israeli prime minister has been in a vegetative state since suffering a stroke in 2004. He is listed in stable condition. In other news, Israeli filmmaker Arik Bernstein, winner for Best Short Film Short, Israel, the Home Movie, that's the name of it, at this year's International Federation of Television Archives ceremonies in Dubai, will not be participating, as the United Arab Emirates does not recognize Bernstein's Israeli passport. The head of the federation said that Bernstein will be honored in 2014 because they're having their ceremonies elsewhere. And I've never heard of the International Federation of Television Archives, also known as the IFTA. IFTA. I don't know. An Israeli was, listen to this one, you think anybody's watching? An Israeli man was fined $8,000 for writing bad things about his ex-wife on Facebook. The wife sued him in Beersheva court for slander, demanding $30,000. So he got a bargain and a deal. The number one baby name in Israel this year was Itai for a boy and Noah for girls. Israel's population, this is all taken from the Israeli Bureau of Standards. Israel's population now stands at 8,730,562, up almost 98,000 from last year. Woohoo. Ephraim Melvis of the Finchley Road Synagogue in Great Britain is Great Britain's new chief rabbi. His induction, held this week, was attended by Prince Charles, who sported a Prince of Wales yarmulke. It was a yarmulke with the insignia on it. It is the first time a royal has attended the inauguration of a chief rabbi. And finally, in the latest of fauna spy arrests, Egypt arrested a duck. let me say that again, just in case you didn't hear correctly. Egypt arrested a duck believed to be an Israeli spy. That's not a euphemism. The bird was spotted in the Nile River with a device attached to its feathers. The duck joins a vulture arrested by Saudi Arabia, an egret arrested by Turkey, and the sharks in the Red Sea accused by Egypt as working for the Mossad. We will now listen to the New Year's greetings by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President of the United States Barack Obama.
I want to wish Jewish communities around the world a very happy Rosh Hashanah. I hope the new year will bring the Jewish people everywhere security, prosperity, and peace. The new year is, of course, a time for taking stock. It's a time for reflection. And as we look back over the last year, there have been many achievements of which we can be proud. Just in the last week, we've witnessed some remarkable achievements. We've successfully launched the Amos 4 communication satellites. You should know that Israel is among a very small and elite group of countries capable of launching such satellites. This is yet another testament to Israel's technological prowess. Today, Israeli technology and innovation are sought-after commodities around the globe. And as a result, and despite the world's economic downturn and malaise, Israel leads the developed countries in sustained growth. Israel stands out economically and in so many other ways. Our young people continue to make us proud. Israeli high school students have brought home numerous prizes from global competitions, including gold, silver, and bronze medals from the Science and Computer Olympics. These are important. They're intellectual sports events, and I think they're very, very indicative. In international test scores, Israeli youngsters lead the Western world in math, and they're in the top tier in science. During a period in which the rest of our region is experiencing unprecedented turmoil, violence, extremism, we in Israel held elections and we formed a new government. I'm proud to serve as its prime minister. We remain an oasis of democracy, an oasis of stability, of tolerance, and liberty, where the rights of all are protected, where all are equal under the law. Of course, we have many challenges too. We have to make sure that our economy continues to grow, that all Israelis enjoy the benefits of that economic growth. And we also have external challenges. We seek to advance peace with the Palestinians while maintaining our security and ensuring that the peace will be a real and enduring peace, not a ceremony, not an agreement that we celebrate for 2 minutes and then collapses. We want a real, genuine, and enduring peace. And this must be anchored on recognition of Israel as a Jewish state and on our security. This is what ultimately is needed. Now, of course, as we look around, we see the situation in Syria. It's of great concern, great tragedy. We're following developments there very closely. And while we're not involved in the internal conflict in Syria, we will defend ourselves if it is necessary. We will act with resolve to protect our people. No one should doubt our resolve. And of paramount importance, we also see Iran continuing to pursue its nuclear weapons program. And this poses a grave threat to Israel, to the region, to the peace of the world. Iran's nuclear program must be stopped. We simply cannot allow the world's most dangerous regime to obtain the world's most dangerous weapons. We already have enough indications of what this could do. In meeting these and in meeting other challenges, I have no doubt that Jewish communities around the world will continue to stand by Israel, just as Israel will continue to be there for the Jewish people everywhere. For Jewish unity is a major source of our collective strength. And together, no challenge is too great. We've acted together. We've defied the laws of history. We've overcome such tremendous odds. And Israel is such a thriving, bustling, prosperous, modern, advanced country. And you can look in a very, very far distance to the west and to the east and to other directions. And you see that Israel is a beacon of stability and modernity and progress. And it's because we're united. Is together, I believe we can continue to achieve great things for the Jewish people and for the world. So as we gather with family and friends to welcome the new year, I wish you all a happy new year. We say Shana Tova Metuka. It means a good year and a sweet new year. So have both. Shana Tova.
Hello, everybody. Shana Tova. 50 years ago, last week, Rabbi Joachim Prince stood with Dr. King on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Representing the thousands of Jews there that day, he told the marchers, when God created man, he created him as everybody's neighbor. Neighbor is not a geographic term. It is a moral concept. For millions of Jews, this moral concept is at the heart of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. As the high holidays begin, it's a chance not just to celebrate with family and friends, but to ask some of life's most piercing questions. Am I treating strangers with kindness? Am I living not just for myself, but for others? Am I doing my part to repair the world? Where we fall short, the new year is a new opportunity to get things right. And where we still have work to do, the new year is a chance to reaffirm our commitments. At home, we must continue building an economy that gives all people willing to work hard a fair shot at a middle-class life. Beyond our borders, we must stand for the security of our allies, even as we take new steps in the pursuit of peace. I was proud to visit Israel earlier this year to renew the unbreakable bond between our two countries and to talk directly with young Israelis about the future we share. Just like the generations that came before us, we live in challenging times. But I know that if we work together, we can make this moment one of hope for all our neighbors, in America, in Israel, and around the world. In that spirit, Michelle and I wish you and your family a sweet, happy, healthy, and peaceful new year.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats, their gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Hey, Shul Kunman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are on live with Professor Elliot Wolfson from New York University. He's written a book called Open Secret. The philosophy, I suppose, just to encapsulate the title of Menachem Mendel Schneerson, also known as the Lubavitcher Rebbe. How are you today, Professor Wolfson? Do we have him? How are you, Professor Wolfson?
I am fine.
Oh, there we go. Yes, somebody hit the right button. That's always a good thing. Let's talk a little philosophy, I suppose. And before we do that, let's hear a little bit about Professor Wolfson. How did you come to get involved with writing a book about Lubavitch?
Well, my major area of expertise is the history of Jewish mysticism and philosophy. So I've been preparing to write this book for a while, and before my academic study of mysticism, I was raised in an Orthodox home, so I've been around Jewish texts and rituals from my childhood.
Did you know Hasidim growing up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Brooklyn. I knew a lot of different Hasidic communities, but most predominantly Chabad and Breslov were the ones that I had most interest in myself.
Mm-hmm. What sparked your interest in Hasidism and mysticism, if I could ask?
Well, that remains a mystery. and one that has kept me on the hunt all these years.
Looking for the answer? I mean...
the quest, something which is probably essentially unknowable.
Uh-huh. It's that Jewish spark and you're looking for the truth, I suppose.
Yeah.
As the mystics would be wont to say.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are lots of topics which one can delve into Jewish mysticism.
Right.
Why pick Chabad Hasidus?
Well, I didn't actually, in the preface I said that writing this book was a surprise to me as well, because I didn't really think I would. But the phenomenon of the Rebbe was quite unique in our time, and obviously the messianic element gives it an added charge, and it just seemed to me that all that I had been reading about it, frankly, was insufficient, because I didn't feel that anybody actually took the time to figure out what his messianic teaching was all about. They were just caught up in the superficials. So that's why I decided to delve into it.
Uh-huh. There are other Hasidic groups with other Rebbes, and Rebbes, by definition, I suppose, are charismatic leaders, and that sort of like throws them into the limelight of being a Rebbe.
Absolutely. But there is a... Well, first of all, none I'm not judging one Hasidic Rebbe against another, but just, you know, it's clear, obviously, that Chabad has a certain presence in the world by their own understanding, which is, I think, different. But more importantly, the style of Chabad thinking is one that I found more agreeable to my own way of thinking. A person ultimately follows the path that is most appropriate for that person.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that the Chabad approach being very academic and scholarly?
Well, yeah. There's a philosophical dimension of Chabad is, I think, more... I'm not saying anything that's novel here. It's well known that Chabad, even though there is a critique of philosophy within Chabad, especially the Tzemach Tzedek, even so, the overall approach is much more amenable to a philosophical orientation, and that's my own.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So, give us a dateline as to the progression of coming up to the final eventuality of the book Open Secret, if you could, Professor Wolfson.
Well, in a sense, I've been preparing for it for a long time, you know, studying this material, but...
You've written other books along the line.
I have written other books, and I've from time to time delved into Chabad literature in the service of other topics. But we were preparing at New York University for a conference in memory of the 10th Yahrzeit of the Rebbe, and I was asked to give a paper. And it was in preparation for that conference that I ultimately decided to throw myself into writing the book. So from 2006 until when I finished in 2008, I intensively focused on the material.
Mm-hmm.
And completed the writing.
Mm-hmm. Were you invited to like other conferences to talk about mysticism?
To talk about mysticism?
Yeah, as far as in like this line and vein, which sort of like helped propel you into writing the book.
Connected to the Rebbe or Chabad?
Correct.
No, not really. I mean, after the word got out that I was writing the book, I did get a few invitations. But the spark was that conference at NYU when I decided to expand my research into a book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, looking at the book, I looked through it quite extensively. You relied very much on written material rather than, say, interviewing people.
That's true. Right.
Go ahead, explain.
Well, again, that's in part my orientation. I'm not a social scientist, anthropologist. So the ethnographic, what's technically called the ethnographic approach, was not one that appealed to me. I do deal with some of the problems of working from text, especially since we know the vast majority of the texts under the name of the Rebbe were, were oral discourses, which others committed to writing, and in some cases he checked, but in most cases not. So there is that question of relying on sources, but I still felt that this is a more than adequate medium to get at the Rebbe's thought.
Okay. Now I notice in the in your notes you use a quite extensive amount of Chabad.
Right.
Works, the literature that was put out by the publishing division of various previous Rebbes and the Rebbe himself.
Right.
Did you find the material somewhat difficult to get through, having very little background in this specific type when you first started?
Well, I don't think I had very little background. I mean, that's what I'm saying. My study of Kabbalah for the last intensively for the last three decades, I think, made me fairly well prepared.
I apologize.
But it is an enormous amount of material to go through. I mean, I don't want to underestimate that. And part of my argument, in fact, is that one cannot intelligently deal with the Rebbe, the seventh in the lineage of Chabad Lubavitch, without going back to the Alter Rebbe. And while I recognize that each one is different and that each historical moment has its own nuances, nevertheless, there's what I would call the intertextual, the way that one connects to the other, is very significant. And even I talk about this as well in the book, that the Rebbe's own understanding of what a chidush, what to say something novel, he's very clear that to say something novel, to innovate is to repeat, and each repetition is unique to its moment, but there is a sense in which he is continuing what came before him, and especially with respect to the Friedrich Rebbe, of whom he thought that he was the fulfillment, so he's very much aware of that. So I felt the only responsible way to do this was really to work through hundreds, thousands of pages.
It's quite a monumental undertaking. Did you have some sort of a hypothesis going in, like you were trying to prove, Professor Wolfson?
No. I went in with open eyes, open ears. The only thing that I knew at the beginning was that whatever I had read was not sufficient. That to really figure this out, one had to take the Rebbe's teaching seriously as a philosophical enterprise.
Mm-hmm. So, if you could, without giving away the entire book, what did you conclude, Professor Wolfson?
I concluded that it's a complicated argument, but first of all, I came to the conclusion that one can understand this phenomenon without exploring what the nature of secrecy is, and that is the Rebbe's indebtedness to a long chain of tradition, Kabbalah, where the issue of sod or secret is paramount, and that there is a secret connected to the Messiah. And then the second thing.
Let me stop you right there just a second. I'll hold your thought. Don't lose it. But I wanted to just focus in on it a little bit.
Okay.
Are you saying that the Lubavitcher's Rebbe's work and his the messages that he was trying to convey over the 50 years of his leadership were a compilation and accumulation of previous generations?
For certain, I believe that. Not only with regard to the Chabad lineage, going back to the Alter Rebbe, but expanding even way beyond that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, no, number two, I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. Oh, number two. Yes. That before one could really understand the issue of the Messiah, one had to understand his cosmology, how he viewed the nature of reality, and that led me to explore again the whole issue of Bitul, of what I render annihilation, what the nature of reality is, and what he taught with regard to what would be in the Messianic era, and what, for me, ultimately, what he meant by the Mashiach, which is a kind of Messianic consciousness, reaching a state of, which is paradoxically both expansion to the infinite, but also constriction, limitation. And so that, you know, those are the keys for me to unfold what he really meant about Mashiach.
Okay, so what you're saying then is you're saying the Messianic era, according to the way you see the teachings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, is a unification of the infinite within the confines of three dimensions.
Right, and when one comes to that awareness, then it's not a collapse exactly of the divine and the natural, but it is a narrowing of the gap between them. So one comes. This is what he taught, that normally we think of the material as inferior to the spiritual, but he would say repeatedly, as actually again his predecessors did say, that in the Messianic state we come to realize that the material is even higher than the spiritual. But by that he didn't mean some kind of gross celebration of the physical, but he meant an elevation of the physical, so that we come to see that, right, the three dimensions of space and time are exactly the house in which that which is beyond time and space manifests itself.
Mm-hmm. What about the prediction of the of a predication of who the Messiah will be?
Well, that's a tricky question. In some sense, I do think he thought that his predecessor was the aspect of the Messiah, and therefore he himself, insofar as he viewed his life as the completion of the task of the Friedrich Rebbe, he does assume for himself some kind of messianic status. But he's not, it's never clear. There's always a sense of uncertainty or vagueness in his teaching. But ultimately, I think that each person has the aspect to be a Mashiach. That's what he was trying to teach.
Mm-hmm. Like the Moses within everybody that I talk about sometimes on the show.
Yeah, yeah. And that means reaching this level of consciousness, you know, which he spoke about endlessly. And it begins already in what Chabad considers his first address as a Rebbe, the Vasi Ligani address of 1951. He chooses to focus on a section from that discourse where the Friedrich Rebbe mentions a passage in one, I think it's in Midrash Tanchuma, which charts the seven tzaddikim from Adam to Moshe. And it's clear he's referring to himself as the seventh.
Right.
And this is why he always spoke of his time as the time of the seventh generation. He's the seventh Rebbe and the seventh Dar HaShvi, the seventh generation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, preparing the way to this messianic consciousness.
Mm-hmm. The Rebbe seemed to put a lot of emphasis on doing There's like the expression "Maisahu Iker," action is the main thing, which is
right.
not unique right. to Lubavitch, but definitely getting the word out, you might say, and encouraging people through like the 10 mitzvah campaigns to actually engage in practical performance of Jewish ritual
right.
in this way of preparing the world for the
right.
Messianic era.
And, right. I completely agree with that, yes. And also the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, the 7 Noachite laws for the Gentiles.
Correct, which seems to be unique that no one talked about that for, I say, maybe 2,500 years, that Jews should go and carry.
Well, that's true. I mean, Maimonides does, and that's obviously a very important source. Maimonides is always invoked in this connection. But you're right, as far as putting it into practice, I would agree with you.
So, indeed. So, did you find yourself being taken into Chabad philosophy, or did you sort of you maintained your academic identity with it?
I have to maintain my academic distance, but I tend to see this as something of a false dichotomy. You know, it's not. I would say my work is not an apologetic for the Rebbe or for the movement. I take an honest, hard look at things. But I would also say that it shows, I hope others see this as well, it shows a sensitivity to the teaching. And in some sense, of course, I have to be drawn into it. It's mm-hmm. too powerful not to be.
Who do you hope to read Open Secret?
Besides
everybody in the world.
No, well, I don't know. No, it's not for everybody. It's hard to say. I imagine several audiences. I expected that there would be the internal Jewish audience, and that would include perhaps a number of people in Chabad. But I also had hoped that it will be read by others in the academic world, and that they would come to see the relevance of the Rebbe's teachings for thinking about philosophical and religious spiritual matters. So I would hope, as an academic, part of our mission is to translate the particular teachings into a somewhat more universal or shared language.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead, Humber. You going to say something else? Okay. Now, I was in Crown Heights this week, and uh-huh. I went into the largest bookstore in Crown Heights, and I did procure some books there. And I happened to ask, like, I was looking at his like new releases shelf, and I said, do you have Open Secret by Elliot Wolfson?
Uh-huh.
And he said, is that a new novel?
Okay.
So I'm just wondering, what is Columbia University Press doing to get the word out if the book about Lubavitch is not in the not to be found in the bookstores in the center in the world headquarters of where Lubavitch is to be found?
Well, that you'll have to ask somebody at Columbia. I'm not involved.
Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't totally surprise me. I have received private communications from a number of Lubavitchers who have read the book. There was an exchange with on Chabad.org. It was reviewed by Shmuel Klatskin, and then we had a brief exchange. So I'm a little bit I'm not surprised, but I also think that that's probably not the only measure.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But it is something maybe I should take up with the marketing at Columbia.
Yes, just to give you the heads up there, you know, like, hello,
yeah.
You know, so are you through investigating Chabad philosophy?
No. It's too enormous to ever be through with it. Right now I'm working on some other things. I'm taking a rest from this, but as exhaustive as my research was, it only scratches the surface. This is an enormous body of material. Yeah. Just the seventh Rebbe, But when you include all, it's...
And boiling it all down to the basic concept of Chabad philosophy and how they were spread out. I mean, the idea is that, you know, the Tanya is based on the verse that you can just do it. It's sort of like the on the title page of the Tanya, and then the Rebbe's motto of making the world a dwelling place down here for the Almighty, and preparing the world and getting the world ready for the Messianic era. And so I'm glad to hear that you'll be maybe there'll be the next one will be something like the open secret revealed or something like that, or you know, Big Brother of open secret or open secret returns, one of those types. Okay, our guest has been Professor Elliot Wolfson from New York University. He's written a book. Open Secret is the title, Post-Messianism and the Mystic Revelation of Menachem Mendel Schneerson. It is published by Columbia University Press, available on Amazon and directly from Columbia University. You can go straight to their website, too. Thank you so much, Professor Wolfson.
Thank you.
Chiropractic healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HI-HI.
Hey, Schultzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I found that interview to be fascinating. Wow. Whew. Hot stuff. Only here on the Jewish Hour. We've got some time to listen to some music over here. Since it is the time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I thought it would be really appropriate to play something liturgical. The first of all the prayers at the beginning of the day is a thing that we say, Moida Ani, I admit to you, living and eternal King, thank you for returning my soul. Great is your faith in me. And this is Avram Fried's rendition. Let's listen in.
Moida Ani Hashem Elokai ve'Elokei Avosai Moideh ani lefanecho Hashem Elokai ve'Elokei Avosai ועל כל החסד אשר עשיתו עמדי ואשר את עושי לעשות עמי לעשות עמי ועם כל בני ועשי ועם כל בני עושכו Hashem Elokai ve'Elokei אבויסי יאל כל החסד אשר עושים אותי וישר את עושית לעשוי סימים לעשוי סימים ועם כל בני וישי ועם כל בריאי יויסכו רוחים הם מלאכיך הקדושים והטהורים שלא ישים את צוי נרחו אדוי נעשו מלאכיך הקדושים אויבי הטהורים נושיי עושים רצוי נברך
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week, Saturday, as I said on the onset of the show, is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has the distinction that even outside of Israel, it is the only holiday of biblical proportion which is not celebrated 2 days. Rosh Hashanah is 2 days. The festival of Sukkot is extended to 9 days instead of eight. Shavuos, the holiday of the Pentecost, is 2 days instead of one. And Passover is 8 days instead of seven. In Israel, they celebrate them as they're prescribed in the Bible. And outside of Israel, we celebrate them 1 day because of basically what 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, a lack of communication as to when actually was the beginning of the holiday. So from what's called a Sveika D'Yoma, a doubt as to when actually the holiday starts. So it could be one of 2 days. So we celebrate both of them. Thank God we only do one. And it's not that the rabbis said, oh, Yom Kippur, we absolutely know. You know, because if we knew when Rosh Hashanah was, we would know absolutely when Yom Kippur is. But we know exactly when Yom Kippur is. But Sukkot, which is 4 days later, that we don't know again already. The thing is Yom Kippur is such an awesomely powerful day. Regardless, we only need one day of it. What's the deal? You think about it. The Day of Atonement. Who's doing the atoning on the Day of Atonement? It's the Almighty. There is such tremendous revelations of godliness on the Day of Atonement that every spiritual blemish, dent, nick, spot, and stain that a person has brought into the world in the course of the year is totally and completely obliterated. Just total, a complete whitewash, total eradication, whatever word you would like to use to describe it's not being there anymore. That's what happens on Yom Kippur. How so and why? Well, first of all, we have this idea mentioned in Haftorah, which we read yesterday, the portion of the prophets which is read in the synagogue, that the Almighty wants to make a relationship with us. It says this in the book of Jeremiah. It says in the book of Isaiah. It says in the book of Zechariah. Moses said it. The expression in the Talmud is, more than the calf wants to feed, the cow wants to nurse. Meaning, you have a cow, and the cow has this like udder, and it's like totally and completely, it's uncomfortable, and it thinks, just get this stuff out of me. I want to give it away. The Almighty is kind of like, you should pardon the expression, I'm saying that God is not a big cow. No, I'm not saying that. But God in his benevolence wants to give blessing. Is just, you should say, chomping at the bit, so to speak, if God had a bit and was chomping at it, to give blessings to us. And comes along Yom Kippur, and here we are, we're making a statement. We know we mucked up, but we expect you, the Almighty Merciful One, you know, whose mercies are infinite, to forgive us and give us a good year. And you know what the Almighty says? Yep, you got it. And it's a very interesting thing. We have a prayer that which is said 10 times on Yom Kippur. It's called Al Chet. We stand, we face sort of like in a sort of a reflexive mood, like head slightly bound. And for every verse, it says, for the sin of doing this, and for the sin of doing this, and for the sin of doing this. And every time we say the word for the sin, we slightly tap our chest. When we come into the synagogue this year, the ushers are not going to hand us a piece of paper and say, this is this year's sins that we're atoning for. The ones you have from, oh, those are last year's. No. Those not. They're in the book. They're exactly the same and have been exactly the same in the book for as long as there's been a book. And every year we come before the Almighty and we say, please forgive me for the sin that I did last year and the year before again that. And here we are again, coming in 5774, and we're right there, exactly the same things we did wrong last year. We did them again this year. And we're saying, listen, God, we want you to forgive us. And for the Almighty, it's no problem, because since the Almighty is infinite, what's one, what's 10, what's 100? It's just, it's insignificant. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the person is coming before the Almighty and saying, the relationship that you want to have with me, God, I want to have with you. And that boils Yom Kippur down into one sentence, and that's what we still have to do this coming up Saturday. We have to take a quick commercial break and be right back. We've got the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, The Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Best way? RabbiFinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. You'll find archived editions of the show. You'll find the U Parsha and Hasidic U Story, which are videos of yours truly, insights into the portion of the week. We have now around this time we have for the holidays and Hasidic stories. You have the e-parsha there. You have classes that I'm doing. Tanya, wonderful classes if I do say so myself. And the very important donations page. It is September. It's still the holiday season. Now's the time to give. If you took care of your 10%, we appreciate the people that gave last week. Before Rosh Hashanah, now it's before Yom Kippur. If you didn't do it then, well, you could make up. So go to the computer, rabbifinman.com, donations, click on a number, put in your own number. It's all good. No number too small, no number too big. The Almighty's got a lot of numbers. Don't like doing it that way? Send your contribution, any donation, to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Quick story. The Third Lubavitcher Rebbe got sick and became very good friends with a doctor who was Jewish but not religious. One day he invited him for a Sabbath afternoon meal. And they served the fish course. And then he brought out what's called cholent. Cholent comes from the French word to means to sleep, to lay over. And what people would do is, since you're not allowed to cook, and it's still a mitzvah to have something hot on Shabbos afternoon, so people would make this stew and then put it in a slow oven for 12, 14 hours. So this doctor was perplexed. What is this stuff? How did you heat it up? You don't use a fire. You explained to me you don't cook on Shabbos. So the rabbi explained it. The rabbi explained it to the doctor. The doctor pushed the plate away and said, I'm not eating this. This is not healthy to have food sitting and cooking for 14 hours. So the rabbi explained to him that if you eat hot food on a Shabbos afternoon, you draw a blessing into the world. Because there was a group of Jews that said that when it says in the Torah, you shall have no fires burning in your houses on the Sabbath, they took it quite literally and they eat cold food. The rabbis came and said, if you eat hot food, you have the blessings of having fulfilled the entire oral tradition. So the doctor said, but Rabbi, you told me that if you blow Rosh Hashanah, if you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you draw down blessings into the world. So he said, yes. He says, well, what do we need to eat shalom for? So the rabbi smiled at him and said, not like this year, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar, we eat shalom. That's going to do it for us today. I want to thank you for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a meaningful, productive, a gemar chasima tova, a completion of the being written in the book of life. And we'll see you again next week. Take care.